Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Abracadabra, Create What You Speak, with Ilan Azulay, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, shalom, shalom everybody, what a wonderful Sunday. I'm Ilan Azulay, you are here with us at Abracadabra, Create What You Speak show. I all the time have a problem saying show because it's... You know, it's a sharing, it's a coming together and creating or observing. Yeah. And so we are here at Abracadabra, Create What You Speak. In Aramaic, it actually means literally, I create what I speak. And this is really what it is about. Not everything, it's about a lot of things, but one of these things of... These are crucial about how do we treat ourselves and how do we talk to ourselves. And, you know, you notice that many times we don't talk to ourselves in the same way that we talk to others. Yeah. We talk to others, we are courteous, hopefully, right? Or nice and kind. And excuse me, and how do you feel? And everything is okay, and... But when it comes to ourselves, what are you doing? How are you doing? And we're not really gentle with ourselves. And that eventually reflects and we project it on the outside and we project it on those who we come in contact with and the environment that we're in. And, you know, and it's... So it's a daily task. It's a daily work of observation to see how do we talk to ourselves. How can we bring ourselves to a place of harmony with ourselves, with each part of ourselves, with each sector of our being. You know, we have all kinds of things. We have our thoughts, we have our feelings, our meaning that is not us, but we experience these, and how do we approach to each faculty, to each sector that is in our presence. How we approach that? How do we treat ourselves? Do we identify with that? And then we are reflecting and projecting it back onto us and onto others. And if we are in a certain state of, we experience, whether it is happiness or something else that is the contrary or the opposite of it, do we identify with it? So if we are being triggered by somebody, do we identify with that which triggered us? And then our reaction is based on the place that we came from when we were triggered. So, different parts of ourselves, and what we do here, or what I hope to bring and to offer, is really a place for discovering a different way of looking at things, for challenging our perception. And when I say that, I talk to myself too, because I have headphones, so now I'm hearing myself as well, talking to myself, and... continuously on the path of healing. And so bring a ways to challenge our perception. And the work that I do and offer is really in a place of offering this different perception to women who are in different places that desire to reclaim their power, especially after a breakup or a toxic relationship, or within or in the midst. And it's a matter of inclusion. And the things that we're talking about today really tie into the wonderful guest that we're that I have here that I am so pleased of having here. And she's going to join us in a little bit. And really, it's all coming together. We're going to talk about the contribution and the immense healing that comes through her work, and how ultimately it all ties together. It all ties together because we're remembering our parts, our different sectors. And when we're going through a difficult time, and it's very easy to lose focus, to lose the view of ourselves, because we have filters now on our eyes based on the experience that we have or had or are in. And we lose focus, and we lose sometimes we think we lose purpose. And the thing is that it is really there. It's just being covered by different thoughts, perceptions, stories that are presented to us, and because of places that we inhabit, that are wounds, we believe these stories. And then our choices that we make are coming from a field that resulted from the way that we were affected by the events that happened. So the phone number here is 323-203-0815, and you can call and share and your experiences. I'm sitting here with my guests and we're listening, and suddenly our eyes are kind of like, well, there is a studio next by and they're playing an accordion there. It's pretty funny. So our insides, our different sectors, when we are in this place of disharmony, of this place of one side is arguing with the other side. You want to do one thing, but then you feel this pull to do the other thing. Or you feel a certain way, you think a certain way, and you feel the pull to do the others. There is some kind of an obstacle, not necessarily a physical obstacle and not necessarily a tangible obstacle, but an obstacle that exists in our thought inside that is holding us from doing one or the other. And accepting all these things that are happening, accepting all these parts that we can experience this and it is okay, and we can experience something else and that's okay, but bringing them all together, cohesion, inclusion, by accepting them, that's when the healing really starts happening, because we're starting to see ourselves in a light that we haven't seen before. And this really ties beautifully in what we're going to talk about with our guests. And before we go to the next song, before I'm going to play this beautiful song of, it's called A Place to Worry About, or the contrary, a place that we shouldn't worry about because it's being taken care of. A place in ourselves that we are, that is like a desert. A place that is like a desert, and we don't see that actually it's a very fertile ground. It's a very fertile ground. It's just a desert because we didn't give it rain. We didn't give it attention. We didn't give it care. We didn't caress it, we put it in a drawer. We don't want to deal with this, so we put it there. And as it ties that I talked about last time, about the Me Too movement, I don't know if to call it even a movement, But really, it's the inclusion that I see, the opportunity for inclusion. Because women and men that were affected, that were oppressed, that were suppressed, that went through this excruciating experience and pain and suffering, that eventually the healing, eventually, ultimately, that the healing is in the relationship between men and women. It's in that relationship. So like men are many times trying to put in a drawer, we don't want to deal with this because it's too painful. Now granted, you need two to tango. So if there are men, or let's talk about men. If there are men that are not in the place of accepting the fact that maybe in a previous experience, or up to that experience, they were in a certain way, they were seeing things in a certain way. If there are men that are seeing that and accepting, and the acceptance is starting to spark the healing process, then those are men that are welcome to be part of inclusive. Now I cannot speak for a woman or for any woman or for anybody, but if we look at this like this, if you are a woman that went through a traumatic experience, and you went through this pain of whatever reason it is that you had the trauma of a relationship or a trauma with men, is to accept that eventually the healing is in that relationship, and it's the inclusion. Now it's not to say that women's circles that are led by women and only women are not, they are very important and very crucial for rebuilding, for seeing, for the support, for the, it's different. And with that, to understand that ultimately the relationship between you and that trigger, that's where the healing eventually will happen. And that's where eventually the healing will happen. It will get there, but it's a process of both sides. So the song Makom LeDeaga is Yonatan Geffen words, Mati Kaspi music, talks about this place, at the end of the sky and at the end of the desert. There is a small place full of wildflowers, small place, crazy place, very far away place, a place we used to worry about. They say that there they know what will happen, and they think of everything that happened already, and God sits there and watches and keeps eye on everything that was created. You cannot pick up the wildflowers, you can just look at them and experience them as a wildflower. Makom LeDeaga, and this is there you go. Yes, that was wonderful. Everything is included, everything inclusive. Yeah, so what I want to do, I want to bring in my guest. She has been sitting very patiently. And so we have here Julie Bergman. Julie Bergman is sitting here with me, and Julie is a producer. She is so many things. She's a Kundalini teacher, and her movie, she produced a movie that we're going to talk about, Harmony, today. We're going to talk about today. This is just a different way of looking at our lives. I know that the movie says a new way of looking at our life. That's the, and I don't want to offend. And hi, Julie, how are you?
I'm good, Ilan, how are you?
Okay. I'm doing wonderful. Thank you for coming. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Wait. It'll be helpful if I turn the mic on, right?
Yes.
Now we go.
Good morning.
Good
or afternoon.
Afternoon. Julie is here. This is so wonderful to have you here. Thank you very much for coming. When we talk about the movie and we talk about other things that you're doing, it was clear that you're going to be here. It was just a matter of time. And I want to start though with saying that Julie is a certified Kundalini, a yoga instructor, and I'm starting with this actually, rather with the other professional credentials, because it's really touching at the point of bringing everything together.
Yeah, it is.
Right?
Yes, absolutely.
So Julie's most recent documentary is A Harmony, A New Way of Looking at Our World, as both an NBC Universal Primetime Television special and a full-length feature. It was produced with the Prince of Wales, Prince Charles.
Yes, it was.
That's exciting. Tell me about this.
Well, first of all, it was a really interesting introduction to him, of course, because you don't pick up the telephone, obviously, and call Buckingham Palace and ask to speak to the Prince of Wales. And we were introduced to him by a colleague of ours and of his in the food industry. He was an organic food entrepreneur, I think he called himself. And he was at a conference with the prince, and the prince mentioned to him that there was a film that he wanted to make based on a book that he'd been writing called Harmony. Did this man know any filmmakers? And I'm absolutely certain that we were the only filmmakers he knew, which is why he said, yeah, I know some filmmakers.
Mm-hmm.
So when he called me and said that he had met with the Prince of Wales and that the Prince of Wales was interested in making this film, I thought he was joking, you know? But it was the beginning of this really interesting journey and odyssey that my ex-husband and I took in making this film and working with this man who's been so misunderstood, I think, by so many people for so long, including his own countrymen. Because he's really, I think, as the film shows, that he's really very sensitive and special and intellectual, but also very emotionally connected to the things that he believes in.
You know, this is, you know, as a kid, I remember seeing him, you know, was portrayed completely differently, or we were fed what they wanted to feed us, right?
Yes, yes.
So your perception, your impression of him was different until you met him.
I didn't really I had the same exact exposure to him that everyone else had. Mm-hmm. And because the United States is so obsessed with English royalty, I remember watching, you know, the royal wedding of Charles and Diana, mm-hmm. and all the kind of public appearances that she made over the years, and that she was the adored one and he was kind of portrayed as the stern,
mm-hmm.
Fuddy-duddy, really. And it couldn't be further from the truth of who this man is, but more importantly, what he feels his purpose in life is.
This is great. You know, when I watched the film, I don't know, you know, I can see like auras, you know, so I could see like the aura of the person, you know, it's like images. I like to take images and not to modify, because the images capture more than just a moment in time. And it's like capturing also the aura of the person at that moment. And looking at him during the shots that you've so carefully and beautifully crafted together, it's just getting a whole different, it's just being with him in the room and really feeling what he's feeling, you know, and what he said so many great things, and he is also expressing the way that he is expressing and what he's doing is so magnificent. But he said this: if we think differently, feel differently, only then we can do things differently. Right? It's
yeah, and it's, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, we're in this climate denial. This climate change denial phase, not most of the world, but certainly in the United States. And his concern for the planet really comes from this idea that everything is connected and that the problems are connected and therefore the solutions must be connected. And he very often would talk about a whole menu of things from mm-hmm. architecture to organic farming to homeopathic medicine to human rights and art and music, and everybody would kind of accuse him of being a bit of a dilettante and sort of flitting from one thing to another and never really delving deeply into one thing, because often that's what we admire when mm-hmm. someone becomes an expert of one thing. But he really saw his value as something different, which was to say, until we see the interconnectedness mm-hmm. of our relationship to each other as human beings, our relationship to the planet that we walk upon, and that we are really charged with being the stewards of, mm-hmm. right? Then we're missing this whole idea of what it means to be in balance.
Mm-hmm.
And that has become, unfortunately, a conversation that is relegated to people who are considered new age, whatever that is, you know, which has always frustrated me, because it seems to me the most practical way to go through life.
So it's not really new. It was there. And that's why it's been there all the time. What is a new age? That which has been here all the time, or that which started 100 something years ago?
Yeah. Like the Western, I mean, right? I think people who label things that way or who dismiss things that way are just not willing to accept, understand, explore something that maybe feels a little bit foreign to them in some way.
Yeah.
But until we're willing to open up, I mean, this is true in everything, right?
That's right.
It's true in education. It's true in relationships. It's true in parenting. It's true in work.
In everything, yeah.
And so the honor really of making this film at the time that we made it was to be able to have a very different, hopefully, conversation around issues of environmental protection and climate change and the way it does relate to the insides of us, that it's not something happening outside.
Hmm.
It's happening outside and it's happening inside.
And what's happening inside is really, we're projecting it on the outside. So if we are in dismemberance, we are separating all our sectors, just like a reflection of our society or of the world, or how the state of the world is, or how people think, or how we think about, like you said, agriculture, architecture, all these things, that instead of just focusing, this is the issue, let's fix this and not worry about how it's going to affect something else, then we are missing the point.
Yes. And I think that, you know, some of the questions that he would ask were really interesting because they forced us in a way to think about things in a different way as we were making the film. So it was a very good education. And it changed really the way I lived my life after that in many ways.
So you came with an intention to make a film in a certain way, and they've introduced you to the way of their thinking that augmented or shifted the way that you've crafted the film.
I made feature films for many years, which is a fantastic experience, but it's much more regimented than making documentaries, because you have a screenplay and you have a budget and you have a schedule, and you know, hopefully, what you're doing when you
mm-hmm.
begin.
Mm-hmm.
And the transition into documentaries was really interesting because, yes, you have a sense of the story that you want to tell, but you're talking about something that's real.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to be open to letting the story unfold in front of you and know how to adjust and be agile. And so, yes, we went in with certain intentions, that many of which we fulfilled. But along the way, we learned things that definitely challenged our, not only our filmmaking prowess, but also our personal points of view. And because we were able to spend a great deal of time with the prince, it was really, it was a chapter in our lives that I don't think we'll ever have again quite that way, you know?
Yeah. I mean, none of the chapters in our life are not going to happen quite those ways, right?
Right. But I mean, I was aware of the fact that probably I would never be in that kind of configuration again.
Yeah. So no, it's really a very, very, very unique and very, so I think like the film is maybe predated its true appreciation.
Well, you know, it was interesting because we screened it at a lot of special events, and we also screened
Sundance,
it at a lot
right?
of... Yeah, we premiered it at the first Sundance London Film Festival.
And it was nominated also for...
No, it won several awards at different festivals. But what was really interesting was when we would screen... Every time we would screen it at a special fancy screening, I echoed the prince's desire that we always screen it also for someone or some place that was more mainstream, let's say. So we would get the same kinds of reactions from people who were not considered to be environmentalists or architects, but who were working class people who lived their lives in a way that was considered to be maybe, I don't like this word, but normal people, as opposed to, you know, wealthy, fancy, you know, people. And they had the same reaction to the film as the other people had. They understood the points of view of it. They appreciated it. And many of them would write to us and say, I've planted a garden in my house. I'm going to grow organic carrots. Or I've decided that I'm going to drive a different kind of car. Mm-hmm. Or I'm going to teach my kids to recycle. Or, you know, whatever simple things they wanted to do to change their daily lives in an effort to give back to the environment. It really did. I mean, it was very heartening to know that it did have an impact on people.
No, this is great because it really reflects how we are. How do we treat ourselves? You know, I know that after seeing the movie and also before, but after seeing the movie, there were certain things that I could see how I would want to do differently. It's identifying with truth, because when truth happens, you know, when truth happens, you feel it. It's like it's you feel it in your body when truth happens. Also when lie happens, or when something it is unauthentic, let's put it this way, it is unauthentic happens, you feel it in your insides. And so growing, for example, looking at organic farming, if we look at organic farming and ourselves, you say, a person called you and say, oh, we planted a garden. Well, the same thing with us. You know, I remember Mr. Rogers, he had a sentence, they made a remix of him, really, really cool remix after he passed away. And he has a sentence, what do you grow in the garden of your mind?
Beautiful.
And this is exquisite. What do we grow in the garden of our mind? You know, and I remember looking at the film about the farmer in Louisiana, it was, right?
Yes.
And he was saying something so important that after the... they were really forced into buying all these seeds that are expensive and all the chemicals and everything, and over time infusing the earth with all the poison and all the toxins, that when you really want to try and grow organic farming, the land rejects it, and you have to go land. Was it 7 years? Was it?
Well, for him, it was, I think he said it was 4 years, of rotating crops and letting the land settle and just, you know, letting it become fertile again. Yes.
And then it's exactly like giving, it's the giving back. And this is the same thing to our body. And when we are in these situations, in relationships that where we are being, we went through a toxic experience. I'm talking about men and women. Specifically, I mean, there are certain situations and that I'm talking, referring to. If you are after a relationship, you're filled with toxicity. And over time, this toxicity becomes ingrained in the body. And when you try to give it health and then you start choking, you start coughing, it's like you're going through the phase of cleansing. And then...
Yes.
So this farmer was talking about the same thing, how the earth was so infused with poison And this was really something. This guy was, I mean, all of them, but his story specifically.
Well, we specifically sought a guy like that out, and Kurt Unkle is his name, and he's extraordinary. But we purposely sought out a guy like this because even 5 years ago when the film was finished, the idea of organic farming still felt to people like for privileged people, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah,
there's
yeah.
nobody kind of more mm-hmm. privileged or more emblematic of privilege than, you know, the next King of England. So we wanted to balance his discussion and his procurement of organic farming on his own farm with someone who's doing it, not just for the reasons that you say, which are of course true, but also he says at the beginning, it wasn't fun anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't make money mm-hmm. at it anymore mm-hmm. doing it with the chemicals because I had to constantly, you know, pay for all of these expensive chemicals and the fuel that it cost for me to produce my crops. And so there's a very pragmatic side mm-hmm. in the movie, we hoped, which was to say that this isn't just about what feels better or what would be better in some utopian,
yes.
you know, context. Yeah. It was about, this is practical, you know, and he says at the end of his segment, what would be so bad about 100,000 farmers feeding people instead of 25,000 farmers feeding people,
mm-hmm.
which is the difference between factory farming and big farming and small farms mm-hmm. that are local, that are feeding locally. And I have a feeling we're maybe moving in that direction.
We are. This is great. You know, and this goes all in alignment with how we see around, how consciousness is expanding with people. Constantly.
And it'll take the people to expand the consciousness of the administrations yeah. for which we are still a victim. But hopefully, you know, that's where these changes happen. They happen from the ground. They don't happen from, you know, the people in charge usually.
Well, you know, in Hebrew we say the fish stinks from its head. So
we say that in English too.
Oh yeah? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know, this and the thing is that the organic farming is the cheapest. It's cheaper than all this kakamaika,
mm-hmm.
right? It's cheaper. Why? Because you know the funny thing is very, very, very down to the daily basis. I go into one of the coffee shops. Until they're going to advertise it, I'm not going to say the name.
Yeah.
So, okay. I'm going to the coffee shops, and you ask for coffee, and if you want it with almond milk or soy milk, they charge you more. But guess what? Almond and soy milk cost cheaper than milk. And yet they charge you more, like 70 cents or something, for just having almond milk. Why? Because it's a specialty thing. So here is an example, just like with ingraining in the client's brain that for this, because it's healthy and it's not what they want you to buy. Well, I mean, they want you to buy it, but what they want to feed you is the crap stuff. Just like with the seeds.
Yes.
And then you had in the film this this wonderful lady, Vandana Shiva, right? And she was talking about growing the different 9 seeds in her garden, and this was fascinating because Earth is so perfectly harmonized. We are the cacophony.
Yeah.
You know, we are the dissonance. And she was talking about the 9 seeds that has all the nutrients and all the vitamins and everything that she needs in there. And this brings me to what she was talking about is so perfectly, exactly the biomimicking.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Tell me about that.
So I didn't know very much about this again until we started to make this film, but there are 2 people in the film. One of them is a woman named Janine Benyus, who coined the phrase biomimicry, which means that we look to nature
mm-hmm.
in how we not only create the world around us, but also technology can be influenced mm-hmm. by imitating or mirroring the way mm-hmm. the way nature does things so perfectly. So and the other person is a gentleman named Jay Harmon, who has pioneered a new form of fans that can be used in air conditioning and all these other things that, again, imitates the way water goes down a drain.
Mm-hmm. The spiral, the vortex.
The spiral. And the thing about biomimicry, which I learned in this making of this movie, is that it's connected to not just nature, but nature as it's connected to, and this is starting to get maybe a little bit esoteric, but this idea of sacred geometry. Mm-hmm. And what's sacred geometry? Well, the simple explanation for what that is the symmetry mm-hmm. by which things are designed, both in nature and then how man looks at nature and designs. So whether it's a building or you know, a fan or a coat or anything, you know, that we are heavily influenced by systems mm-hmm. that we adopt. Mm-hmm. And many of the systems we adopt are healthy systems. It's only when we start thinking that we know more.
That's when we get screwed up.
That's when we get it screwed up.
Exactly.
And that's where the prince's theories and ideas come into play, which is to say, again, if we go back to what works, mm-hmm. we will be much better off than if we think we know better than what's been working for thousands and thousands of years.
That's right. And that is to illustrate the point that we know only what we know. What we don't know, we don't know. And we don't have, we cannot control the consequence. Mm. We can control how we think about what is happening that will lead to consequence this or that. And when we think that it's all because of me, the egoic self, the self that is saying, oh, just because of me, I can do this and I can do that. Like, you know, not everybody's like that, of course, that has... a lot of materialistic capabilities, but there are those that, well, because it's me. Look, I know I've been to that movie before. Yeah. The actor dies at the end, you know. So, and the biomimicking is really how we are looking at ourselves. It goes back all to what he said. This is fascinating. You guys have to see the movie. It's called The Harmony, and we talked about the kid in. Nigeria that invented a solar that is like a tree, because a tree is the nature. The tree knows exactly how to receive its light and its energy, and it moves. That's right. It moved. Everything moves.
So he knew that this needed to move.
To rotate. Yeah.
That's a perfect example of biomimicry. That's exactly right. And, you know, when I drive around Los Angeles and I see all these flat surfaces with photocells on them, it's lovely and it's great, but that's the only choice we're being given right now.
Yes.
And it's probably not the most efficient way to go about it. And they would do well to speak to this young man in Nigeria and say, okay, how can we now bring this system that you have to other places, including cities?
Yeah, but that's not going to be good for some people that are making money, and that is the whole point, that when people that are ruling with fear that something is about to happen to them, then they try to oppress, put more, just like we did with medical marijuana, that became legal, but the CBD oil is still not, it cannot be administered in certain ways, and I mean that kind of thing, because it's not that they're... You see, this is another thing that the prince said. The difference is, the problem that is happening now is that now we're doing it consciously.
Yes.
So people that are consciously trying to maintain the patriarchy and the oppression, they know all this. And this is the problem, that it's being done consciously. If you take it, let's say, 40, 50, 30 even years ago, 40, 50 or more, then... Okay, you can say, okay, well, you know, like people thought the earth was flat. All right, well, you know, that is until a certain point.
Hopefully they knew 30 years ago that it wasn't flat.
Well, no, I'm not thinking,
I'm kidding. But so, yes, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it's all good. But but now it's conscious. The difference is that now we're doing everything consciously, and we are consciously creating cacophony.
Yeah, and I would say that in the beginning of the industrial age, I don't think people thought it was a bad thing to create convenience, to make it easier for people to go into a supermarket and buy something that's already been cut for you and all of those things. Because there was a lot more people working out of the home, and time became a much different component of all of this, and commodity. And so convenience became a way to serve people. But as you say, once people understood the cost of that level of convenience, they kept going because it wasn't economically feasible anymore to slow things down. And when I say slow things down, I don't mean slow things down from the point of view of invention. I mean slow things down in order to allow better invention.
To allow something that is more
advanced.
I mean, you can look at the buildings. I mean, I lived in Boston for 14 years. Have you seen the buildings over there? I don't know. It's like stuff like that. But also here, like putting a patch on and a patch and a patch and a patch. And it's already becoming really, behemoth, I'm talking Hebrew. But really, you go so deep in that it is really becoming costly. The more you go in, the costlier it becomes to stop it.
Yes. And so you don't look at the system to heal the system. You look at the system to figure out how to spend the least amount of money and energy in order to just keep it going. And
exactly.
As long as we're in that mindset, we're going to continually have these problems.
Absolutely.
And so it's wasteful, for example, to be knocking everything down, which is what happens in certain neighborhoods. You see that all the buildings are being leveled because many developers want to build some new big thing. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's the right thing or the best thing.
That's
and
right.
Until we start to reclaim the idea that we need to look at the systems from a holistic perspective. And that goes for what you talk about all the time, about our, you know, what goes on inside of each one of us individually. You know, we compartmentalize because that's what we've been taught to do.
Yeah.
We compartmentalize on the outside because that's considered to be more efficient.
Well,
but I think we're learning that nothing could be further from the truth.
Well, yeah, I mean, efficient, I mean, I understand that you're talking efficient, practically efficient or efficiently practical, but I'm not talking also about the physical, about the material. I'm talking about ourselves, like he's talking in the movie, that is also being reflected on the outside. So you're not looking at the issue, the real issue. You're looking at the symptom. You're trying
That's
to
right.
heal the symptom.
So you're not looking at the root.
No, you're not looking at the root, and you're looking at the symptom to try and to try quote unquote heal that, but you're not really dealing with the issue. And this is what I talked about in the beginning of the program. The real healing, women and men, the real healing is in our relationship to one another. So if you meet somebody and they trigger you, instead of running away, you have an option. Because this is the thing is being vulnerable. The vulnerability is the place of becoming powerful in allowing yourself to come out, in allowing yourself to be, to deal with the issue of the healing, like we're talking about the Me Too, the healing, the relationship between the man and the woman, the understanding and acceptance of masculine and feminine, and the differences that we have as men and women. It's already almost time. This is great. I wanted to, the website is the Harmony Movie, right?
Well, the movie is not yet available for streaming.
But the website for the film.
But the website for the film, if people want to go, is called theharmonymovie.com.
.com.
And they're welcome to put notes to me on the wall, and I'll read them and I'll respond to them, and
What is your wish for with this film, with this work? Because you're doing so, I mean, combining the Kundalini, combining the work that you're doing with the film with other films.
Well, it's hard to talk about these things, obviously, without sounding incredibly pretentious. But what I would say is that I try to, in my work, I try to also reflect the things that are important to me personally and try and be as integrated as I can be, right? So the films that I make are meant to be hopefully interesting and entertaining, but also staying with you in some way and ultimately leading people to do something, you know, whatever that is. I'm not judgmental about how they choose to do something, but I do think that one of my teachers, one of my spiritual teachers, who's a Tibetan monk, talks all the time about compassion into action. And I feel like if I could sum up what I try to do in my work and in my life, it's that. I try to take my compassion and turn it into action.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. And this is, thank you. Thank you for
having me.
Oh, absolutely. Pleasure. Thank you for sharing you and sharing the film and bringing yourself to this place and putting yourself out there. Because this, you're connected to truth. So,
and thank you for sharing what you do with all of us.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So, theharmonymovie.com. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Ilan Azulay. It's been a wonderful day. And today, tonight, I want to tell you I'll be doing a live lighting of the menorah. Tonight is Hanukkah, is the festivities of light in the Jewish calendar, and it's interesting that everything that happens astrologically in other ways fits this calendar, and so we'll be doing live, and I will be talking about this a little bit. So check my Facebook. It's facebook.com/bodysoulsound. My website is what is my website? Bodysoulsound.com.
You just heard that in stereo.
Yeah, in stereo. And so this is that. A wonderful day to you. And the last song is a love song by Mati Kaspi. It's called also Kemo Galgal, like a wheel, because we are all like a wheel. The way that we treat ourselves, we treat the world. The way that we treat the world, we treat ourselves. Have a wonderful day, Litrot, and Chag Sameach.
Is that okay? So you're going to do the live thing on your Facebook? You should.